Some people wake up every morning at the same old time, and they hit their same old alarm clock to make it stop making that same old noise, and they get to the same old sink and brush their same old teeth, and they get in the same old shower and take the same old shower and get on the same old clothes and go to breakfast and talk to the same old family, and they eat the same old food, and then they get into their car or they have somebody drive them to the same old place, be it an office or a school. And you get to the office and you do the same old thing and you talk to the same old people and go to the same old meetings. And if you go to school, you go to the same old classes and take the same old tests and you do the same old thing in school and in work. And then you get back into your same old car and you listen to the same old man talking about U.S. politics, or maybe you listen to the same old music on your CD player, or you listen to the same old radio station and drive the same old route back to your same old house where you do the same old chores and you talk to your same old family and you watch the same old TV shows and you go to your same old bed and lay down on your same old pillow. And then you wake up the next day and do the same old thing again. Does that sound like a life that you want to have? Does that sound like the life that when you were a kid that you envisioned that you would have? Get up to the same old thing. Do the same old thing every day. And people get in routines, don't they? Well, the New Testament apostles had a routine. But the New Testament's apostles, their routine was not ordinary. It was not the same old thing. In fact, if you read the accounts of the New Testament apostles in the book of Acts, you will find out that they led amazing lives. So much so that they began to change the world. These apostles had a routine. And I want to read about this routine a little bit with you, and I want to kind of explore this passage with you today in Acts 14, verse 1. If you could turn your Bibles to that page. It says, "At Iconium, Paul and Barnabas went as usual into the Jewish synagogue. There, they spoke so effectively that a great number of Jews and Gentiles believed." I think this verse tells us a lot about the apostles. And there's two words in this verse that just explain the lives of the apostles. As usual. They went into the Jewish synagogues as usual. The message says, as they always did. I love that phrase. That phrase shows you that their lives were committed to one thing and one thing only, and that was to preach the gospel. As they always did. I think it's important here to point out that they are not just speaking to Jews, they are speaking also to Gentiles. Now, Gentiles, as you may or may not know, are people who are not Jews, all right? And these people, the Jews grew up being God's chosen people, and when Jesus died on the cross and rose again, the Gentiles are brought in to God's chosen people. So it's interesting here to point out that he's speaking to both Jews and to Gentiles in Iconium. You guys got that? All right, verse 2. "But the Jews who refused to believe stirred up the Gentiles and poisoned their minds against the brothers." But the Jews who refused to believe poisoned the brothers. The Jews started to gossip. And they poisoned the Gentiles' minds. I think it's very interesting here that it's the Jews here who have a problem with what Paul and Barnabas are speaking about. Because Paul and Barnabas are preaching to the Jews about Jesus, who fulfills all the things that the Jews grew up learning about. The Jews would memorize large sections of the Old Testament. And in the Old Testament, it tells about a man who would be born of a virgin in the city of Bethlehem to the line of David. This man would go through many trials. He would be baptized by a guy who would precede him, and he would be put through illegal trials, and he would be beaten, and he would be killed for us. And he would raise to life, and he would go back to heaven to be with his Father, and he was the Messiah. And the Jews grew up knowing that. Not only did they know that, they knew like 1,080 other things about this man named Jesus from the Old Testament. Did you know that? There is 1,093 mentions of the Messiah in the Old Testament and who the Messiah was actually going to be. And the only person that fits this description is Jesus of Nazareth. And they knew that. And they're the ones who have a problem with that. And it makes me think about us. And it's a good illustration for us. Why do we attack our own? I didn't like that service today. Those sermons do nothing for me. Can you believe what he said? Can you believe what she did? Any of that sound familiar to you? Have any of you guys spoken words like that? It's terrible what gossip does to the church. It is absolutely the worst thing. And we have got to repent of that. That is tearing, that tears churches apart. And if there is a problem that you have with anybody, you should go to that person, not talk behind their back. That is terrible. We all know that, don't we? Everyone in here knows that, yet, and we all do it, too. That's what's even worse. We attack our own. We need to stop doing that. Verse 3. So Paul and Barnabas spent considerable time there, speaking boldly for the Lord, who confirmed the message of his grace by enabling them to do miraculous signs and wonders. I love the first word of this paragraph, of this sentence. It's not, meanwhile, Paul and Barnabas stayed to preach. It's not, and Paul and Barnabas stayed to preach. No, what is it? It's so. Again, as they always did. The word shows intent. It shows these people are poisoning the minds of the Gentiles, so they stayed. Shows real intent. Shows what they were about. Showed that they lived their life to preach the gospel as they always did. Verse 4. The people of the city were divided. Some sided with the Jews, others with the apostles. There was a plot afoot among the Gentiles and the Jews, together with their leaders, to mistreat them and stone them. But they found out about it and fled to the Lycaonian cities of Lystra and Derbe, to the surrounding country, where they continued to, get this, they continued to preach the good news as they Always did. Right. They continue to preach the good news. This is amazing. They're about to get stoned by these people, and you can kind of picture this scene. This is kind of how I imagine it. You know, Paul and Barnabas are in some kind of a chariot thing or whatever they rode back then, and they're standing in the back of it. They got some driver back here who's driving them, and they're out there on the side of this chariot yelling at these people who are about to stone them with their pitchforks and their torches, you know, and they're saying, "Hey, let me tell you about Jesus." Can you picture that? This is how they lived. This is what they did, as they always did. Verse 8, in Lystra, there sat a man crippled in his feet, who was lame from birth and had never walked. He listened to Paul as he was speaking. Paul looked directly at him, saw that he had faith to be healed. And called out, "Stand up on your feet." At that, the man jumped up and began to walk. Man crippled in his feet. The Greek here says impotent in his feet, meaning that he was not able to walk. He had never been able to walk. This miracle could not be explained away. All right. So Paul sees this guy and heals him. And it's this miraculous, outstanding thing that nobody sees. The text says that he leaped up and started walking. Now, I know how hard it is to teach somebody to walk. It's very difficult. And this guy had never walked in his life. God showed this miraculous sign. God chose this person to have a miracle happen to him. Now, notice here, this guy did not just get his legs healed. This guy heard the word first. Do you understand that? Paul was preaching to this man. This man believed. Paul saw that, and he healed him. See, miracles do not author faith. Rather, they bolster faith. Do you understand that? Miracles do not author faith. They are not the creators of faith. Miracles bolster faith. And that's how it is in the Bible, is when you experience a miracle, you are bolstered by it. For instance, I'm able to breathe. Do you guys know that you are able to breathe? Everyone take a deep breath right now. Ah, that's refreshing, isn't it? That is a miracle right there. Did you know that? That right there is a miracle, that you are able to breathe. Isn't that cool? Doesn't that say, hey, God's a little bit cooler in my book right now? You know? That's what I think. When you experience a miracle, it gives you more faith. It bolsters your faith. It gives you more faith. All right. Verse 11. When the crowd saw what Paul had done, they shouted in the Lyconian language, "The gods have come down to us in human form." Barnabas they called Zeus, and Paul they called Hermes, because he was the chief speaker. The priest of Zeus, whose temple was just outside the city, brought bulls and wreaths to the city gates because he and the crowd wanted to offer sacrifices to them. So, Paul and Barnabas are about to get worshipped here. In fact, there's a story about Zeus and Hermes. And this was by a guy named Ovid. He wrote this epic poem about Zeus and Hermes one day disguising themselves as men and going down to a village to see how people would treat them. Well, most of the people in this village treated them poorly and did not help them in any ways. There was one elderly couple, though, that did. They helped Zeus and Hermes in human form. Well, Zeus and Hermes destroyed the village and rewarded this old couple. And these people in this city of Lystra knew this story. So when they saw Paul do what he did, they thought, here they are again. They're back again. And let's do this up right this time. Let's not forget them. And they started to worship Paul and Barnabas. Verse 14. But when the apostles Barnabas and Paul heard of this, they tore their clothes. That's a sign of anguish for Jewish people. "Men, why are you doing this? We too are only humans, like you. We are bringing you good news, telling you to turn from these worthless things to the living God who made heaven and earth and sea and everything in them. Basically saying, get rid of your silly God superstitions. We don't make God. He makes us. Now, remember, he's speaking to a bunch of Gentiles here. Just remember that. In verse 16, in the past, he let all nations go on their way. Yet he has not left himself without testimony. The New Testament of modern speech says, yet in his beneficence, he has left his existence unattested. I like that. I just wanted to use the word beneficence in a sermon. That's what I wanted to do. He has shown kindness to you by giving you rain and heaven from heaven and crops in their seasons. He provides you with plenty of food and fills your hearts with joy. He breaks out general revelation, and that's a great term. I like that term. See, because God gives us specific revelation and general revelation. You probably know what this is if you've been in the church for a very long time. I'll give you an example of a specific revelation from God. This thing right here is called a Bible. If you don't have one, you should get one. It's pretty important because it is a specific revelation. This is God saying, here is who I am. Read about me. Here you go. And this is God saying, giving you a specific revelation of who he is. General revelation is like what I was talking about earlier. I'm able to breathe. I know that God exists because I am able to breathe. I know that God exists because every day and every night there's a sunset. Or every night there's a sunset. I know that God exists because there's grass in the fields and there's flowers everywhere. And there's people who have things like opposable thumbs, which is an amazing little device if you ever thought about it. We're like one of like, I don't know how many animals, but not many animals who can actually do that, who can pick things up with one hand. That's amazing. We can talk. God has revealed himself. And this is what Paul is saying to these Gentiles. He's saying, God has given you rain. He's given you crops. He's given you the changing of seasons. We are not gods. God is the one that makes us. So let me tell you what he did. This is really interesting that Paul does not try to prove that there's a God. Do you realize that? God has made each and every one of us with this little strand of something in us that tells us, that shouts at us that there is a God. And so no one is without excuse. He has not left his beneficence unattested. Oh, I just love that. Beneficence. God has shown us all, and God has proved to us all, even those who do not have a church like this, even those who live in the jungles of Africa, they have plants there too, don't they? They have bugs there too. Look at a bug next time you see one, and look at all the intricate little things that go on inside of one in 17 quadrillion ants of the world. You know, you pick up an ant and just look at it. That's amazing. And you know, this did not just happen by chance. This did not happen by chance. There's no possibility that that just happened by chance. And people say, well, I don't believe in God. Well, that's a lie. You have to. There's no other explanation. Well, they say, well, there's the Big Bang. Well, if there was a Big Bang, who caused the Big Bang? Get back to that. There's God is here, and he has not left his beneficence unattested. But you notice what Paul and Barnabas are doing to these people who are trying to worship them. They are preaching as they always did. This is what they lived for. This is who they were. This was in their DNA. As they always did. Verse 19. Then some Jews came from Antioch and Iconium and won the crowd over. They stoned Paul and dragged him outside the city, thinking him dead. I think this is interesting because you notice where these men are from. They're not from Lystra, where Paul and Barnabas were, are they? Do you notice where they're from? Some Jews, remember those Jews, came from Antioch and Iconium. Now, where was Paul and Barnabas, and where did they have to escape from? Antioch and Iconium. Oh, wow. Look at that. These men followed them from Antioch and Iconium to Lystra to visit them with some nice big boulders. And they turned the crowd that was just about to worship them and to sacrifice bulls to them, now stone Paul. They decide that these Jews are the ones that have it right, so let's stone Paul. And they do. And they do it inside of the city, which is weird. They didn't do that. It's an idea that there was a hurry to stone him. They did not have the time to take him outside of the city, which is where they normally stoned people. They were in a hurry to do this, and they stoned him and thought he was dead and dragged him outside of the city. Now, there are some commentators who think that Paul actually died and that he died and rose back again to life. Some people think, and there's actually scriptural basis if you want to look it up, 2 Corinthians 12:2. You can kind of look at an account that Paul, it's kind of a mysterious account of heaven that Paul gives. It's kind of interesting if you want to look at that. But most people think that he did not die, that he was just thought to be dead. But it does not really matter if he was dead or if he was alive. It doesn't matter at all to me, because what's most important to me is what Paul did after he was stoned. Now remember, if you were stoned, you're not feeling very good, right? Even if he did not die, he's not feeling very good. He probably has broken bones all over the place. He probably can barely breathe. He's just exhausted from being hit with big boulders, right? Anybody would be exhausted from that. I love the Rocky movies. Does anybody like the Rocky movies? Anybody here like that? All right, I really like those movies. And there's something about this boxer named Rocky that I just really get into, because he's not the biggest guy in the world, but he's got the most heart. And because he has his heart, he's able to win these great victories in the boxing ring. Well, this last movie that came out, it was called Rocky Balboa, the last movie, and it came out like last year sometime. And he's talking to his son, and his son is really sick of living in his dad's big shadow. And he tells his dad this, and he says, "I cannot live under your shadow anymore." And then Rocky says this.
"You ain't gonna believe this, but you used to fit right here. I'd hold you up and say to your mother, 'This kid's gonna be the best kid in the world. This kid's gonna be somebody better than anybody ever knew.' And you grew up good and wonderful. It was great just watching. Every day was like a privilege. Then the time come for you to be your own man and take on the world, and you did. But somewhere along the line, you changed. You stopped being you. You let people stick a finger in your face and tell you you're no good. And when things got hard, you started looking for something to blame, like a big shadow. Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Now, if you know what you're worth, now go out and get what you're worth. But you got to be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that. I'm always going to love you no matter what. No matter what happens. You're my son. You're my blood. You're the best thing in my life. But until you start believing in yourself, you ain't going to have a life.
Stop making excuses. Basically. Stop living in other people's shadows and claiming that your life is no good because of that. I don't know what you're going through today. I don't know where you've been or what you've done, but I know that there's a lot of people here who are hurting. Maybe it's a bad marriage, or maybe it's a finance problem, or your work is hard and you don't know what to do. You lost your job. I don't know what you're going through. But I can tell you this, none of us have ever been where Paul was at that moment. None of us have ever been stoned like Paul was at that moment. None of us have ever been thought dead like Paul was at that moment. We live in America. America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, where we have the ability to do basically what we want to do. We have freedoms beyond most of the rest of the world. The poorest among us is richer than 3/4 of the world. Did you know that? Stop making excuses for why you can't preach. I know when I was reading this section of scripture, it killed me. It killed me that I am not out there preaching. You get the idea of Paul and Barnabas walking around talking to people. Just saying, hey, how you doing? Hey, let me tell you about this guy I know named Jesus. Oh, you see this grass right here? You know who made this grass? Let me tell you about Jesus, as they always did. Now let's watch what Paul did. Verse 20. But after the disciples had gathered around him, he got up and went back into the city. The next day, he and Barnabas left for Derbe. And now Derbe is like 60 miles from Lystra. And it's kind of an interesting thing if you think about how the shape that Paul was in at that particular time. He's probably carried on a stretcher of some kind, probably not able to walk at all. But he brushed himself off and got up and went to Derbe. And one of the commentators talks about Derbe, and I put a picture up there of the track from Lystra to Derbe. And you can see in kind of the background, you see the mountain, snow-capped mountains, and the beauty of all the rolling hills around there. And the commentator thought, you know, how nice it must have been for Paul when he was walking along that path to see that and to let God fill him up with his glory. Again, I don't know where you are right now. Let God fill you up. Let God take you on the road from Lystra to Derbe. Guess what they did in Derbe? Can you guess? Can anybody guess what they did? Yeah, as they always did. Paul was just stoned. And he preached as he always did. He made this a lifestyle. Get this. This is even bigger. Paul took several missionaries journeys. There are three that we know about. I have a map up here of if you could go to the next slide. All right, this is a map of Paul's missionary journeys, and you can see kind of some squiggly lines and some of the things that he did. All right, I want you to zoom up. Just go ahead and hit the next slide. Zoom up. Look at where he went the most. Antioch, Iconium, Lystra, Derbe, the place where he was stoned for crying out loud by his own people. And guess what he did at all of those cities, all of those times, as he always did.